are your top two or three for the Army in the next couple of years?
Well, top three is first. Number one is we'll continue to provide trained, ready forces for any of our contingencies, Iraq, Afghanistan, anywhere around the world. We'll never stop making sure that the soldiers that go in harm's way are the best prepared, best units in the world. Second, it's important that we now look to the future and develop the forces that have the capabilities, characteristics to allow us to continue to be agile, adaptable, and employable. Mm-hmm. And we'll look through our entire force and see where we need to be in 2020. We're developing those capabilities and characteristics that we want to see now. And third, as always, we must sustain a high-quality all-volunteer force as we move forward. We've been incredibly successful with that. We never want to walk away from it.
So then you would describe the general state of readiness of the Army as?
Well, what I would say, it's good. But what we do now is we get people ready as they deploy. So we make sure the forces when they leave are the most ready forces around. We still have some gaps because the wars we've had are those that now are just coming back and are ready to go to other contingencies or might be called to go to other places. They're not as ready. Mm-hmm. So what we want to do is continue to get that faster and make sure they're ready all the time. And so when somebody calls, we can send as many forces necessary to meet the needs.
How do you do that? With whom do you partner to make this happen?
Well, we have this thing called Army Force Generation. So with our major commands, Forces Command does that. Their responsibility is to rotate forces through cycles that make sure they're ready, they're manned, they're trained to do this. And then what they do is as the units come back, we make sure then we reset them, get their equipment ready, then put new leaders, new people into the formation so they are then prepared if when asked. And that's the process that we've been going through now for several years. And so we'll have to adjust that as we move forward. But today it's still focused on getting the troops and units ready to deploy, especially to Afghanistan.
So it's kind of a leapfrog sort of process. What is the progress report then on the changeover to a brigade structure?
Well, I think we did that about 5 or 6 years ago. It's been very successful in us getting enough brigades for us to try to reduce the tension on the force. Although we've never met our goal of 1 year deployed, two back, we've gotten closer. As we now move, now what we've done is we're trying to get the lessons learned from this brigade and see what we have to do to make it even better than it was before. And we'll continue to move forward. We'll make some adjustments in oversight. We want to link them a little bit closer to divisions again to get some training, oversight, and mentorship, and we'll continue to do that as we move forward.
Does that remain the goal, the 1 year deployed 2 years back?
Absolutely, always our goal. We have not there yet, but it's always our goal.
And how does that then map to the need of more special forces, a greater agility for whatever may come in the future? I mean, you never know what's around the bend.
Well, the one thing that's occurred over the last 8 or 10 years is this relationship that we've built between conventional and special operations forces. It's stronger today than it's ever been. And so what we now have is a synergy that we've gained with conventional forces working with special operations forces to meet this agility, be adaptable, and be able to reach and conduct counterterrorism operations around the world and do many other things. And we will continue to do that. And I always remind everybody that the conventional force feeds our special operations forces. We don't just recruit special operations force soldiers. They are in the force at least for one term, and then they go through a qualification test to get into the special operations forces. So it's about the conventional force generating the soldiers for the special operations force, and it's also about the close-knit working relationship that we have and want to continue as we move forward.
So it only makes sense to have a close-knit working relationship and open lines of communication with them.
Yeah, to me it's critical as we move forward because when we look at the missions maybe 3-4 years down the road, I think this relationship between conventional and special operations force is going to be critical to that so that we can provide what we might consider to be the important missions, developing other armies, building partner capacity, those kind of things, but also conducting counterterrorism operations around the world to protect ourselves. I think the synergy that we have to build between conventional and special operations forces is critical.
It had been more compartmentalized before. This is new. This is relatively new.
It is. I mean, I think because of Iraq and Afghanistan and the operations we've had to conduct, it has brought us very close together in conducting operations both in theaters and the training we're doing now. And so what I have to do is I'm going to work with the Special Operations Force Commander. We're going to have a little summit between the Army and Special Operations Forces to really look ahead mm-hmm. to what we think we need to do. And I'm very excited about this because I think it will build on the relationships we've already built over the last few years.
And is that because of the type of enemy or the type of war fighting that is being done?
It is. I mean, it's a nod to the adjustments that we have to make in our capabilities and our strategy.
And that then lends itself to agility.
It does.
All right.
It does.
We are talking with Army Chief of Staff General Ray Odierno, and shifting gears a bit, the division of duties between the Secretary and the Chief of Staff.
Well, first, I work for the Secretary of the Army. As I've learned being in Iraq for so long, the strength of our government is our civilian oversight of the military. And we kind of sometimes don't pay enough attention to that. We just take it for granted here.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an incredibly important thing. So it's important to have that civilian oversight of the military. Obviously, Secretary McHugh and I work very closely together. We have a door between our offices. We often walk between that door several times a day to talk to each other as we discuss issues. We work together, whether it's in operational issues, whether it's acquisition issues. Obviously, he has some more responsibilities in acquisition than I do, but I certainly consult with him on that on a regular basis. I work getting our forces ready, but I certainly keep him up to date on everything we're doing. So we have a very close relationship. We'll continue to do that, and it's very important as we move forward as an Army.
I'm sensing a theme here, and it's about communication between maybe factions that not necessarily had the best communication in years past in history. You got to have it now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it is about leadership is about communication. It's about your ability to communicate your message, your intent, so people understand what we're trying to achieve. And we have to do that with each other, above us, and below us. And, you know, one of the key things we have to do is communicate inside of the Army the things we want to prioritize, what our intent is, where we want to go. We have to talk about that outside of the Army so people understand what our message is, and then we got to talk about it across the Army as well. So it's really important.
How do you do that, though?
Well, what I'm learning is there's several different things you have to do, and one of the things we are diving into is social media, believe it or not. And it's one way for us to very quickly get the word out to soldiers. Everybody's on Twitter. Everybody's on Facebook. Everybody's on all these. So we have to learn how to use those to help us get our message out, as well as us creating our normal forums that we have in the Army. So I have official forums that I have that I send information out. I'm now moving towards using social media to do that because we have 1.4 million active and reserve National Guard soldiers in the Army.
And they're young.
And we have to get the word out to them. So we're really focusing on trying to figure out what the best way to do that is. More and more, it's social media.
You know, I got to tell you, in all the prep work that I did to get ready for this morning's interview with you, it never occurred to me that we'd be talking about Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, I'm now, you know, it was hard for me. I'm an older guy, you know, but I'm now doing Twitter. And, I think I've done a few since I've been here at the convention, and I will continue to do that. But it's a way to get the message out and let people know what you're doing and where we want to go.
And before we wrap it up this morning, your advice or what you would tell young people who might be thinking of enlisting in the Army, seeing the Army as a lifestyle, a career, a way to go, what do you tell them?
Well, I think there's a number of things. First, the Army is an opportunity. It provides you the potential to learn a skill. It provides you to be something greater than yourself, be part of a team.
Mm-hmm.
The Army's built on teams. The Army's built on values and ethics. It's built on, you know, I talk about trust is the bedrock of our country. Trust between our soldiers, trust between soldiers and leaders, trust between soldiers, leaders, families in the Army, and trust between the Army and the American people. So we can help embed these moral and ethical values. We can help you become part of a team. We can give you a skill. And it's a great profession. And it's a way to build yourself up and either prepare you to do something else later on in your civilian life or stay with us and make it a career. And it's a great opportunity for any young man and women.
And very briefly, if people do decide to leave the Army and start a civilian life, there's a transition process that not always, sometimes it's clunky.
Right.
So
right.
Where does that stand?
Well, one of the things we have to do is, again, we have to work with the civilian companies to better market our young men and women coming out of the military and let them know what they're getting.
Mm-hmm.
Incredibly skilled, incredibly talented, incredibly dedicated young man and woman, and we're doing that on several different ways, and we have to continue to work that very hard.